point.
All right, it's 1 p.m., so I will call to order the Complaint Committee. Just as reference, the Complaint Committee, upon a majority vote of a quorum of members, may go into executive session for obtaining legal advice pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A3. On any matter on the agenda, the Board reserves the right to change the order of the agenda items except for hearings. Mr. Blanchard, are there any changes?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay. If we could, let's go ahead and go through an introduction of staff and board members. So if you could, please introduce yourself.
Rachel Kears, Admin Assistant.
Kevin Mountain, Board Staff.
Keith Blanchard, Board Staff.
Michael Romano, Board.
Quinn Tharp, Board Member.
Terry Stanfill, Executive Director.
Assistant Attorney General Frankie Schenekberg, Attorney for the Board. Also with me is James Corey, my legal intern.
Thank you. All right, so our minutes audio recordings from the March 28th, 2019 regular committee meeting minutes were posted and audible?
Yes, they were. Okay.
Do I have a motion to approve those minutes?
Mr. Chair, I don't think...
Stan, I was not... Okay, I'll make a motion. We accept as written.
Okay. Second. I'll go ahead and second. Any discussion? No, apparently not. Do we need to do a roll by? Okay. So Michael Romano, aye.
Gwen Tharp, aye.
Okay. With that, we approve the minutes. Thank you very much. Sorry for all the procedural stuff here. Okay. First to order, we have a student complaint. With the Arizona School of Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine. Mr. Blanchard, would you like to give us a brief update?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Members of the Complaint Committee, at its meeting on October 28, 2019, Complaint 19-005 was presented. After discussion, the Complaint Committee determined that the institution should allow the student to complete any appeals that may be available to her and to reapply. The institution submitted documentation regarding that 2 or 3 month process. I've attached the new information to the current report dated June 27, 2019. In this report, it updated the complaint summary, the current status of the institution, and their determination that they made regarding not allowing her to return. The timeline that they submitted in reference to the complaint. I've attached an updated report. The board letters that went out April 1st to the institution and to the student. The institutional timeline, February 8th, 2019 email from an instructor regarding concerns with the student, and then the Department of Ed email with board staff regarding the financial aid denial. Here to answer your questions is LM on the phone, and here representing the institution is Josh Hannum. He's the current president. Adrian Hall is attorney and also a board member. And Susan Wagner is the financial aid manager.
Okay, thank you very much. We will start with the student, and just as a reminder, we will use initials for the student complainant. So, LM, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am.
Great. LM, just as a reminder, we have had a chance to review all the documentation that's been provided to us, so I don't want you to feel as though you have to exhaust yourself kind of restating all the past history, but if you would like to make an opening statement, that would be great.
Okay. Would you like just an opening statement or a synopsis of what I've been through the last 3 months?
So we have those records. Anything additional that you'd like to offer is you're more than welcome to do, and then we'll have some questions for you.
Okay. Let's see here. So you've had everything. Yes, I, in good faith, went through the process, excited to find out that I would have a chance to reapply. Basically ran down to Tucson, 500 miles, and did the application, and then 3 days later they told me there was another application. So anyways, long story short, I jumped over all the hurdles and all the hoops and did everything I could it just a lot of stalling in between emails. I know they're busy, but, you know, it was just really tough and frustrating because I was trying to get back into school to catch up. I really thought I could. And then with week by week, no one calling me back, and it really felt like I got it, that like they really just didn't want me back. So I just became so disheartened, but I still kept up. And somehow, you know, I did everything they said after I sent in the application, the second application. Then Josh was playing a game with me. Like, you know, he would say, oh, you didn't complete it. I'm like, well, okay. Number one, he's not the admission person, but he's the so-called president. And he's telling me that I didn't complete it. And I'm like, well, what did I not complete? Tell me. He says, well, you should know. And I said, well, I don't know. I said, I remember filling everything out, sir. Please let me know. I mean, it was a game back and forth and back and forth for 10 days, 2 weeks. Just, he wouldn't tell me what I needed to do. Finally, he said something about secondary ed, and then I realized he probably just wanted some more information, and so I threw that in. So everything they could do to stall, they stalled. Everything. It took until May 30th to know anything. And then it was just so disheartening because after I went through all that, and he said, well, you know, we can't give you... probably in May, they sent that email out saying, you know, we haven't decided whether or not you should come back, but just so you know, you're not going to be able to qualify for funds, student loan funds. And then his last statement was, do you still wouldn't even bother coming back if we let you back? And then I said, well, yes, I would like to be readmitted, please, and I'll try to figure out how to find funds if that's the case. So basically, they told me in a letter they couldn't get funds for me. And then I said, well, I would still like the chance to come back. So another month went by, six weeks went by. Finally, I got a letter that said you probably have, this is a big one, and I put it in the thing. So this is ASOM. Has reviewed your application for readmission to the school, and the admission committee has decided not to readmit you to ASOM. Well, it took them 8 weeks. I mean, it just didn't make sense to me. But anyways, he offered me right away money. He said, well, in exchange, like, you know, in exchange for a full release of any claims you may feel you have against ASOM, we propose to return the amount of your first quarter tuition to the DOE. The proposal would reduce the amount of your responsibility for your student loans. The proposal does not include any acceptance or admission of liability or responsibility whatsoever on the part of ASOM, including admitting you to school, discharging you from school, or determining not to readmit you to the school. And then it says the last thing, and I'll be done. The remittance of funds by ASOM to the DOE is also conditional on your renouncing any administrative complaints or actions with any governmental or quasi-governmental agency with oversight of ASOM, including you guys, APBSE. I forgot your acronym. I'm sorry. The Arizona Board. The accreditation for acupuncture and oriental medicine. You can accept the resolution, and our lawyer will prepare a release. And that was it. And so I felt really just frustrated and disappointed after all that. I was just hoping, but I realized it took so long that, you know, felt like they weren't going to let me back in. But anyway, I appreciate the board for asking them for my appeal, and I did appeal to the best, and I did my best, and now I just am asking for my funds to be returned. He did offer my first semester, and then I after that there was a real huge lag time, like almost 2 weeks, and I figured, well, maybe they're just not going to do anything because he was going to have. So I thought that was awfully strange, and I called the board and I said, just make sure I'm on the review because they're not really paying attention to me and getting back to me. And even after the offer, it was nothing. So I just felt really, really pushed aside and just not taken care of properly in many ways. And then the last way was I was never released from student loans. I could not, I've been trying to figure out how am I going to pay for these student loans. And this, I even called NSLDS, and I called my provider, which is OSLA, and they said the school never told them to release. So I'm very frustrated, even in the financial aid department. They never released me, so it shows I'm an active student still. And I said, and I asked them, NSLDS, and I asked OSLA, I said, so are you sure it's not me? He says, oh, no, it was the school. Yesterday they told me this, the school did not release you from being active. So I'm just telling you my frustrations with them, and I know there's nothing else I can probably do. I have no lawyer. I have no help. I have no job to pay back my, so I'll let you guys figure this out, and that's all I really have to say, and thank you for hearing me.
Okay, thank you for that. A couple things just as a reminder. The role of the committee here is to really establish, did the school follow their policies in regards to the admittance of the student, and then also through the disciplinary and appeals process of that piece of it. So I know sometimes we can get caught up in some of the other elements of the decisions around reimbursements and those types of things, or how that will be settled out. But that's not really the role of the committee here. It's really to understand kind of what took place. So I do have a couple clarifying questions, if I could, with you, Ms. LM. So one,
yes.
What date do you recall enrolling into the institution?
When I first started school there?
Yes.
I moved. The end of September, October 3rd, maybe? Susan would know. I want to say it was like October 3rd.
Yeah. Your enrollment agreement shows September 22nd, 2018. Does that seem like the right date?
Perhaps.
Okay.
It was around that time, but class actually started. I think I went in for my orientation around that week.
Okay.
The enrollment agreement, I'm not sure what that means, but yeah, I got to Tucson around that time, and then we started school on like October 3rd.
The enrollment agreement is the document that you signed when you applied for the going into the school. In that you provided initials in a number of areas, and I just wanted to confirm one of the areas that you did initial in was that you received a copy and had reviewed the school catalog and all the subsequent policies associated with that. So you did initial that.
Okay.
When were you notified by the state of Washington of the revoke of your license?
I was never notified that. I had a suspension, and I was gone on a mission trip for 3.5 months, and they turned my, they turned it basically into a revocation because I was gone. They couldn't get a hold of me. I was in the Amazon, and I rarely got to my computer even. So that's what I talked to the investigator. That's what they told me.
So are you saying you never received anything from the state of Washington in regards to their final decision in regards to your license?
Never.
Okay.
No. I found out just from hearing about it.
Where did you hear it from?
From ASOM. I'm not sure if I heard before or not. I just knew that I surrendered my license. I did it. So I first had a suspension, and then 2 years later, I surrendered my license.
And when did you surrender your license?
I did it twice because for some reason it didn't show up. First time in 2017.
And the second time?
And so it was surrendered, and then what happened was they couldn't get a hold of me, so they turned it into revoked. Just 6 months later, just because it wasn't showing up and I didn't know why, so I sent that communication to them.
So the timeline you're giving certainly suggests that yeah. was surrendered and revoked before your enrollment agreement was signed on September 22nd, 2018.
Oh, of course. Wait, yes.
Okay. And when you initialed that, you reviewed the school catalog policies and procedures, which included the admissions process in it, which did talk mm-hmm. through certifications, licensing, essentially being a responsible student, bringing anything forward of relevant information. Is there a reason you decided not to bring forward this information of your license being revoked in Washington?
I briefly looked at the catalog, and I've been through plenty of certifications in the past, and anything that's of importance, I was either asked in an interview or it didn't even occur to me. No, not at all. I mean, I feel like I've started anew. I'm starting over again. And I to me, it's not even an issue. I didn't even, it was the furthest thing from my mind. And then, of course, not having any questions directed towards me, which certainly I would not even have an issue with. I would have certainly told them, and but I would have been like, okay, well, you know, what's the big deal? But that didn't even happen. It took them five months to do my interview. So nothing was ever asked. I was brought in, and I did my application. Boom. So nothing, there was no filter. And that's been my thing. It's like, why did you guys not, if that's the case, if I wasn't supposed to be there, why did you guys not have me there? No student is going to read a 30-page handbook. I mean, I looked through it to see roughly about classes and vacations, you know, graduation requirements and dates of clean needle technique and all that. But that was my focus, certainly.
Okay.
And nothing to hide.
I appreciate that. But you did initial, acknowledgement that you received it and reviewed it. Wanted to clarify.
But still, there's nothing. Yeah, but still, there's nothing in that that would. I have lots of different certifications and diplomas. I was a physician for 23 years. I have so many. Well, ask them. I sent them. They wanted everything, so I sent them like 20. So I have plenty.
It
didn't even occur
that.
To me.
I appreciate yeah. that. What you're sharing is it just did not occur to you. You mentioned the interview piece. I want to try and get clarity. It looked like in the documentation you had been speaking with the admissions director prior to enrollment in the July timeframe.
Yeah.
Can you talk to me about yeah. what those discussions were about, what that covered?
Yeah, mostly what Susan needed for getting me to school, which included all the my past schooling, even my high school diploma. I mean, yes, it was a lot of that. Like, what else do you need now? She gave me a checklist, which was helpful. But some things I just was not clear on, so it was mostly that. I could certainly send you no things, but that's what it was. What do you need? What do I, is it, can I still make it into this fall class? Do I have time? How is it living there? All that fun stuff.
Did you discuss background of the coursework that you'd be looking at and maybe background of your experience with her at that time?
Well, she said, do you have a bachelor's or anything? And I said, well, I have a doctorate in naturopathic medicine. I went to Bastyr in 1990 to 1994. And she said, well, just send me your transcript. And that way, because you'll probably get some advanced placement. I mean, meaning that I can opt out, of the basic anatomy and physiology and stuff like that.
How long would you say those conversations were in that July time frame? I don't know if they're 5-minute conversations, if they were 30-minute conversations.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she was, oh no, they were short and brief. She's a very busy lady, and I'm sure 5, maybe once in a while 10 minutes, but not very long.
How many would you say that you, phone conversations you had with her in that time period?
Well, a lot of them were emails. I have them all on email.
Okay.
Because that's how you get a hold of busy people, is you email them. And she was pretty good about that within, 24 hours. That was no issue. It was no issue applying to the school and getting in on their provision. I think it's called a provisional until they do your, I don't really understand that still, but anyways, it's called a provisional until they get all of your diplomas and, everything taken care of.
And the interview
that was not an issue.
Yeah, the interview you referenced that took place 11 weeks later, can you describe that? Was that also with Susan, the admissions director?
That was with Susan and Josh, the president now, and then the ex-president, Alex, he was there. And I got called in and, number one, I was going away for the winter break, and I was concerned because to me, I knew that they probably had to do that for student loans or whatever. Anyways, I was just trying to keep things on top of things, and I was worried that they were going to call me while I was on break. So I emailed Susan and asked her, I said, can you try to get me in before I leave town? And she was pretty good at replying yes. And so the day before I left school for the break, they sent me an email. I can show that to you. It's no big deal. So I went in and she would ask me questions about, we were all kind of laughing lightheartedly, but, why do you want to come to school? And do you think you'd be a good student? And so it was light, but yes, those kind of, the entrance questions, basically.
Were there any discussions of any concerns of performance, interactions with teachers, anything of interactions with students mentioned during that interview at that time?
None. They asked me if I had any problems with any students, I think, and I don't. There was only 8 of us girls, and we all got along pretty darn well. We're like sisters. And so that made it really hard for me to leave. But, and then they asked me, how are your teachers, everything going good? And I'm like, yeah, I'm doing great. I love the program. As you can see, I'm doing really well, and I'm enjoying it. And so there was no dissension, no disharmony. Nothing was said from them. And it was 11 weeks. And recall, we were on break for almost a month. So when I got back, it was that was week 11. So we went right back in, and I don't want it to be a false week, but I think we went back in like week 14 or 15. So there was several weeks there that nothing really happened because we were all on break. And then we got back in, and then within a week, I got that, 2 weeks, I got the letter of dismissal.
Before you received the letter of dismissal, were you called in for any type of discussion or any type of review?
No, nothing.
Were there any?
The last time I talked to anybody was the interview, and it was all very nice, and they were my teachers. I mean, Alex knows I'm I can be a little bit like asking questions, a lot of questions, because I'm a physician. So I would ask him questions that probably would be a little bit more challenging than the rest of the class. But otherwise, I loved the process. I loved everybody. I really felt like I fit in. So it was a real shock, super shock. No. I asked them that when they sent me the letter. I said, you guys didn't even warn me or ask me a question. You're just going to let me go? I don't understand this at all. So that was really tough.
In your mind, Alan, what was the reason you were terminated from the program?
Well, back then I had no clue. But when he sent me a revised letter, it said that I was released because of my history in Washington. And that was basically it.
So to your knowledge, they never addressed your classroom behavior and disruptive behavior that they claim? It's a letter I have says.
No, but in a letter, did they ever question it?
Yeah, did they ever discuss it with you? Or because you said...
No, never. No, I've never had any discussion about any of that, any issue about any behavioral thing. Never. No one said anything to me ever. No one took me aside. I was not called to the president's office. I was not called anywhere to talk about anything. All of a sudden, we had a great day where I was about to do clean needle technique. I paid $700 for a class in needling. We're taking a practice class. I said hi to Susan in the hall. She was about to get married. I gave her a hug. But I'm so excited for you, and everything's going so good. We were getting our practice done. I love the girls. Everything's good. And then boom, I went home. She said, "Did you check your emails?" And I'm like, I think she meant about something she needed from me still. Checked my email, and it said I was out immediately. I'm like, I was in, yeah, it was awful.
During the appeal process, were you brought in, had any type of discussion over the phone with the school leadership around concerns? Any additional questions?
No. No, nothing. In fact, I was hoping for that. I asked, I said, "Do I get to meet with somebody?" "We're not there yet. We're looking at your application." No, nothing. Nothing. Nothing to go over, no question, nothing.
Was the question, one of the school's claims, and we'll hear from them shortly, but is that you were advising one of the patients in the clinic to quit taking their medicine. Was that ever discussed with you?
Yes, that was the first thing that came up when they said I was released, and I said, "But why? What did I do?" And so I actually talked to my girlfriends, and I said, "Do you guys remember any of that?" And but anyways, I know what I said. So we were in and number one, I'm a doctor. I don't do that when I'm a doctor, so that's not cool, and I realize that. But there was a fella that was on the table getting needles, and he said, "Well, is there a way to ever change my meds?" I said, "Well, yes, there is, but you have to have guidance, and you need to have someone help you."
If I could stop you, LM,
that's
sorry.
What I said.
Sorry, LM.
Sure.
Really, we're probably getting beyond the scope of what we would review, but I guess you had mentioned somebody told you that was a concern. Who told you that and when?
It was in the first, where did I get that? That's true. Where did I get that? I don't know. It was in, I want to say it was in the first letter of dismissal before it was revised.
Okay.
They said something about they said something about that. It's like they were trying to find something to, they're trying to find a reason. And then after, and then I wrote back and I said, excuse me, I didn't say that. Why didn't you ask me? Why do you guys just accuse me and not even ask me what happened? Instead of making this, you know, Democratic and having me come in and ask me, why did you just throw that at me? It's, and all my girlfriends were like, Lucinda, that was not said. I said, I remember it, you know. So I had, so I called my friends and I said, do you guys remember any of this? Honestly, they said, yeah. And my two good friends right next to me, they said, you didn't say that. You told him that if you ever wanted to get, try to get off, you needed to see like a doctor or a naturopathic doctor to get ideas.
Okay. And yes, you're, as yeah. I review the letter that you received on February 8th, 2019, it does call out that they understand that you may have counseled a client in regards to that. So thank you for that. Any further questions?
Mm-hmm. No, I just wanted to know. No, you covered almost everything I had.
Okay. LM, we're going to take a moment and ask the school to come up. We'll allow them to make a statement as well, and then we'll probably have a series of questions for them. Respectfully, if you would, just give them the opportunity. Certainly, we'll come back if we have any clarifying questions for you as well, but I'd like to invite the school up. If you would, please introduce yourselves. And again, please keep in mind that we are referring to the complainant by their initials, LM.
Thank you, sir. My name is Adrian Hall. I'm a board member at ASOM. And here is the current president next to me, Joshua Hannum, and also Susan Wagner, who was the who was in charge of admissions. And LM has referenced her several times as her contact person at the school. So I'll just give a little overview of the school's position, and then I suppose you'll have questions for us, and either Josh or Susan or I will try to address those depending on, I guess, who's better qualified. The sum and substance of the school's position is that LM applied for the school and was admitted through our normal applications process. It was imperfect in the sense that the interview happened later than it should have, perhaps, or there might have been other, imperfections in the admissions process, but the gist of it was we submitted the application, or we gave the student the application to fill out. She filled it out. She checked all the boxes of about having reviewed the manuals, as you indicated, and she was enrolled in the first quarter. And the president of the school was a teacher of hers in the first quarter and had some experience with her, and described her as a difficult person who had her own way of seeing how people should be treated and where acupuncture fit in the global series of healthcare modalities relative to naturopathy, and he described her as a little bit of a strong-willed person who wanted to go her own way. But he never confronted her about it when he was her teacher the first quarter. But on February 8th, he received a complaint from one of her new teachers that she was continually disruptive in class and disrespectful to the teacher and to the theory of practice of acupuncture relative to her previous training. And the teacher's email contained a complaint from one of the teacher's students. In essence, the student or the teacher forwarded a complaint from the student about LM's disruptive behavior and distracting behavior, so that the class was, the teacher was constantly trying to placate LM rather than staying focused on the lesson plan for the class. Alex, as the school president, received the email and began the process to decide what to do about it, including, in the normal course of events, issuing a warning and saying, let's talk about this. This is an issue for us. But before he got to the point of doing that, all of this other information came to his attention, namely that LM had been licensed as a naturopathic physician in the state of Washington, but that that she had, through a formal process in front of a board just like this one in Seattle, had her license suspended for a period of 5 years for a series of very serious, troubling findings. I sort of look at this a little bit like a criminal case, in the sense that, you know, a police officer might be driving down the road and see somebody make an erratic turn or not use their turn signal, and he's got a duty to pull over the driver and investigate. What's the problem here? Are you having a problem? Are you not paying attention? These are the behaviors I observed on the roadway. But when he pulls her over and looks in the car and sees that there's somebody tied up in the back seat with blood on their face, it doesn't matter much anymore why he pulled her over.
I appreciate the extreme analogies, which I would consider to be extreme. If we could just try and stay focused.
So I'm trying to explain why the school didn't issue any warnings about being disruptive in class, because the school learned that she'd been not only had her license suspended in Washington, but that she'd ultimately had it revoked. And not only revoked, which was their most serious sanction, but without opportunity to apply again to get the license, because she'd been determined to be a danger to the public. And when you read through the findings of the state of Washington, they all addressed integrity, responsibility to patients, falsifying records.
We've had a chance to review that.
So it was natural, I think, for Mr. Holland to look at that and say, well, you know, it doesn't matter if she's disruptive. We should have known about this. If when you apply to become a professional or go to a professional school for medical training, any reasonable person would think, well, gee, I ought to disclose in good faith as part of my application process that I've been drummed out of another state and determined to be a danger to the public, and I'm not qualified to practice medicine in that state. But that was never addressed by LM in her application, despite the application's call for a description of her certifications. And so the decision was made rather quickly that this is a person that shouldn't continue to be a student in a professional environment that depends on integrity and honesty in relations with your peers and your patients. And so that's why the letter was drafted dismissing her from the school on February 8th, I guess it was. Thereafter, LM complained to a number of authorities, including this one, various people at the school had communications with Mr. Blanchard about what the appropriate process was, and we were encouraged to give her an opportunity to reapply, which we did. During the course of that reapplication process, LM submitted two different applications that were not consistent with each other or the first application we received. Josh tried to get some clarity about some of those things. In the meantime, we decided as well that based on advice from our financial aid consultant that it was unlikely that she would qualify for financial aid, because it was unlikely that she would ever be able to obtain professional licensure as an acupuncturist or any other health care provider in the state of Arizona or elsewhere. And we informed her that we're not gonna offer you financial aid if you want to come back for that reason, even if for some reason you would qualify for financial aid. We're not willing to sponsor you for it, because we're responsible to the federal financial aid authorities and to boards like this for the number of people that we graduate that actually can go forward and practice. And it was clear to our administrators from her record that she's not going to be able to get that kind of licensure, and we shouldn't jeopardize our ability to provide financial aid to other students who are deserving by sponsoring her. And she told us that she was willing to continue her application process and figure out some other way to pay it. And the school administration reviewed her reapplication and decided essentially that there was nothing that she could do to undo what we had learned from the state of Washington. And that's, I think, a fair summary of how we got here.
Okay. Couple questions. In the catalog, on page, I believe it's 30, under the due process guidelines for a student, number one is conversation with the student. Are you aware of this?
Yes.
Okay. I guess from what is demonstrated here, that does not sound like there was any conversation with the student.
No, I don't. There wasn't. As Mr. Holland got the report to conduct and decided to conduct an investigation, he conducted an investigation and decided that, you know, there's no point in going through step A, B, C, D, and E when you're going to get to Z.
So the school considers the policies and procedures you put in place to be optional?
No. There are considerations that supersede going through. There was nothing in a conversation with LM that.
I'm not disputing that fact. I'm just calling out step one in your policy is conversation.
Yep. We did do it.
Not take place.
Nope, it
and
didn't.
Your argument is at times we will ignore that process when we make our own determination and take action upon that.
Well, that's right.
Okay.
You don't want extreme analogies, but if a student comes to school with a gun and lays the gun on the table and...
Please stop. At this point, we're talking about somebody who's applied for a school and you've had people tied up in the back of the car and now somebody coming to school with a gun. Those are not comparisons here. I respect where you're going with it, but at the same time, it has no place for this discussion.
Very well.
Okay. I'm just trying to understand the policy and procedure piece. So, Mr. Hall, Mr. Hammond, do you have something to add?
Yes, if I may. On page 40, I believe the step that Alex took, and again, this is speaking for Alex, would be to have moved straight to dismissal policy, which is outlined on point 17 on page 40, where it says behavior in any manner that is dishonest, unprofessional, disruptive, or harmful to fellow students, faculty, staff, school property, reputation, that is cheating, plagiarism, or discrimination of any kind.
So I guess from that, and I'm pulling that page up right now, the letter that was provided talks about may have and trying to get clarity around those pieces, or not really trying to get clarity, but just not necessarily convicting the person, but yet terminating them from school. And so I appreciate that, but it does seem rather inconsistent in the process when you call out that you would at least engage with the student to understand their situation. Maybe finding out information of, I was out of the country at the time it was reviewed in the state of Washington, maybe some other circumstances that occurred there that got us to the point where it got to. I'm right or wrong, you have a policy that states you'll follow that, and it seems as though you moved past that relatively quickly. I had a couple other questions. Is it typical for the school in the acceptance interview, is it typical that that happens as late as it did in this particular case?
I'd like to answer that. When she applied, she had everything in line, everything was in, with the exception of she did not have two treatments from a licensed acupuncturist, which is part of the application process, and she did not have a copy of her high school diploma, okay, available to us. The date that we received the two letters of treatment, one was on 11-5-18, and the other was 11-12-18. The high school diploma arrived on 11-21-18. Okay, so with the high school diploma, that's a federal financial aid thing where they fill everything out. There's a form that we get that says, yes, she has a high school diploma, and it was verified with the Department of Ed. Our auditor, the reason we have that on our application is our auditor physically likes to see that, along with the master promissory note, which we have documentation that she did. It was just asking her over and over to, hey, can you turn that into me so I have backup? So we did admit her on a contingency based on, we need your high school diploma and we have to have your two acupuncture treatments turned in. So she was able to start school and she was able to receive federal financial aid because there were documentations that, yes, those were complete, those were accurate, and they were done. We just didn't have it in her file. So her interview was delayed until after we received that information. And the latest one that was received was the high school diploma, and it was dated on 11-21-18. And at that time, I sent out an email and says, hey, we need to schedule, or I think I might not have sent out an email. I think I grabbed her in the lobby. I said, hey, I got your high school diploma in. I've got everything ready to go. We need to do your interview. And that's when she stated she was leaving for the holidays. So I convened a board before she left to give her her permanent letter of.
So I understand that's why it took the length of time of 11 weeks in this particular case. Is
correct.
That typical of the admissions process?
No, that is not typical. It's been done, if we have all the information, it's been done probably three or four times in the past. Number one, if we're waiting for the official transcripts from a foreign student, but we have all the preliminaries in and WES or one of the other agencies that's doing the transcription says, yes, it's good to go, here's the preliminaries, and they meet the requirements, but it's going to be a while for the hard documentation. We like to get our interviews done at least the month before school starts so that we can get our paperwork generated and make sure that everything's in order.
So that's a pretty big swing from a month before school starts to 2 months to 3 months after school starts based on documentation. What is the school's practice in regards to if at the interview 3 months in it's determined that the student is not a good fit for the school?
She'd be dismissed. The student would be dismissed.
What obligation would the student have in regards to payments, anything like that? Essentially, school determining not a good fit or not accepting you.
Well, to be fair, I think you're asking us to give a hypothetical answer to.
So you've never gotten anyone who's started school you refused?
I've never had an episode remotely close to something like this.
Well, I wasn't asking that. I'm just asking, after a student starts school, you've never had a student start school and interview them to only determine they did not meet what you have prescribed as the admissions requirements. For example, it sounds like you were okay with starting LM without representation of a high school diploma. So I'm assuming that's a typical practice of your institution, that you will allow a student to start school without demonstrating proof of graduation from a high school.
No, I think maybe you missed what Susan said. I think she said that we relied on the federal financial aid information that showed that she had produced, apparently, a high school diploma.
Okay.
But for our records, for backup documentation, for our auditor, we needed a copy, a physical copy of that instrument, which we hadn't received. But we had certainly reliable information that she'd graduated from high school, and the documentation was available. It just hadn't made it into Susan's application file.
And it's certainly not a common practice. We have some students that might apply very late in and be asking, can I still be am I still eligible? And, you know, can you get your documentation in time before orientation were to start? Can you matriculate? Those sort of questions come up. So it's not at all a common practice that we would have the interview that late in the process. This was a student that presented herself as a doctor coming into the program. So the school was relying basically on good faith that, you know, this is an upstanding person and
she is what she says.
Okay. And so it carried on to just waiting for that diploma.
So 11 weeks in, I think you said you noticed that the documentation, two pieces or three pieces, had not yet been received. And you were waiting on that to essentially execute against the interview. Is that correct?
The oral interview, yes.
Were there notifications to the student, missing documentation, anything like that outside of verbals that the school can present?
Yes, I send emails.
Okay. So you were sending emails to the student saying, hey, we're still in need of this, this, and this to
correct.
Finalize your pieces. Okay. If you would, at some point, we'd probably ask for you to provide that if you haven't already. I can't say that I saw that in the documentation. So that would be helpful to see. If we could, is it typical as well that in this particular case, it sounds like the president, as well as Josh, as well as the director of admissions, were all in the interview together? Is that typical for the interviews with all students? She described that the president, Josh, and the director of admissions were all in that.
Are you asking that is it typical? Those specific three are there, or
yeah, is that the typical audience for an entrance interview?
Typical that there would be three admin representatives in the interview.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, that's helpful. Thank you. At that point in time, were you aware of any type of concerns, disciplinary issues with the student, any type of challenges that would create concern?
I was not. I was privy to conversation with Alex Holland, just regular in-school banter in an office of him having a difficult student this quarter that he had a really hard time with, and every once in a while was giving him quite a workover from her standpoint to his, and he was just saying he felt like she just needed to release whatever she had in her background and be coming to learn the medicine that we are here to teach, the reason that you're here. So just let it go. Great that you have a point of view, but let it go. So I'd had that conversation with him a few times, but other than that, to my knowledge, outside of asking Alex, I don't know of a complaint that had come in.
Okay. You describe, I think, the former president in this case, who was part of that interview process, expressing frustrations around that. Are you aware of any type of written documentation that was provided to the student prior to that interview of concerns around how she was engaging or anything of that nature?
We don't maintain that we gave her. I think we can.
Yeah, not suggesting. I'm just trying to understand.
No, not that I'm aware of.
I think we're just trying to appreciate. The student even have awareness that there were legitimate concerns around her performance based on the policies of stating, if we have concerns, we will make you aware of those concerns. And it sounds like she was not made aware of those concerns. It seems as though...
I think that's a fair...
It seems as though everything was made aware to her in a letter that she received of a dismissal. And it sounds like she even showed up to class not realizing that, only to be told by a staff member, have you checked your email?
I thought it was a fellow student.
I'm just going off of what she said, so I'm trying to understand if there's anything else that you can afford us to demonstrate. No, we did meet with her, we sat down with her, we coached her at these types of times, she was aware of her performance issues, but it sounds like everything was really realized in the February letter.
Well, I can tell you, because I had LM in one of my classes, and we were talking about HIV and AIDS, and she kept stating, well, that's not how it's really done, and that's not how it's really done. And so I approached her and I said, you know, I understand that you may have more extensive training and that you may have a deeper understanding of what's going on, but I'm trying to get across the basics because this is how it is on the National Board for the Clean Needle. So if you could just sort of hold your comments to yourself, and she did.
Okay, so it sounds like you provided instant coaching in a class environment, and she responded
to
that piece. So I wouldn't exactly associate that with her knowledge and awareness that there were performance concerns or issues with her as much as you two had a what sounds like a very productive conversation of where she was offering maybe some of her expertise. You asked her to back that off because of where the class was at and the information you were trying to convey, and what you've stated is she backed off.
That's correct.
Okay.
And then also, if I can add to that, I know that Alex Holland has been a teacher, has been teaching, I think, for 30, 35 years. He's now retired. The way that the situation unfolded as far as what would normally be a grievance sort of situation where someone would come and say, we're having an issue with this student, or what have you. It's interesting because I know Ellen speaks highly of her fellow students and that they were all girlfriends and got along really well and everything. But we had a student come in and launch a complaint, basically, and just say, this is really difficult. If I may just say that their statement was they were embarrassed in class for the teacher because of how combative LM could be on certain topics, escalating to either slamming a door when leaving the room, slamming a book when finishing a topic, or an argument. And right after that student had come in and given a complaint, or a while afterwards, another student came in and gave a verbal complaint. So there were two complaints now and a possible grievance.
When were those?
Those were, forgive me, I don't have the date right in mind. It was the day before the letter came in from Celia, our teacher, who filed a letter. So basically there were three complaints in a row. It was complaint, this is an issue. Complaint, this is an issue. Letter from Celia saying, listen, can we launch the grievance policy here because I either got to sit down with you guys and talk about it or I need to sit with her and talk about it. Something's going to happen. And she says in the email, if I sit and talk with her about it one-on-one, I'm concerned it's not going to go so well.
Well, that's understandable. The reason I'm trying to time frame this is because it's very confusing for me that she started February 24th of 2018, and then the dismissal letter comes in February 8th of 2019. So we're talking about a year playing there. So I don't understand. Did this disruptive?
No, sorry, the dates are wrong there. That should be.
Oh, that's right. She started September 20th.
Yeah, that's a.
So, but in that time frame, I just don't understand if this disruptive, because I understand the license part, and that's not a question for me so much as did you follow your policy in following this, and did you address it? And I just don't understand how that time frame could go unless she was just instantly disruptive for a very short period of time.
That was sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, sir.
Yeah, versus, you know, why wasn't this addressed with her? Secondary, your dismissal letter doesn't just name the Washington stuff. It really starts off with you were disruptive in class. So,
And I think that's because in the beginning of drafting that letter, I believe Alex was beginning with, listen, we've had some issues here at school. You were disruptive in class, and as things came to light, so basically we had a complaint, an emailed complaint with an attached complaint from a student to the teacher, and then from there the investigation into the licensure being revoked. I did want to comment on...
But clarifying, never notifying the student of that, nor asking the student to speak to that on that behalf. Okay.
And then also... in the complaint from the students, one of the things they mentioned was, in a very sweet way, that they were concerned. How was Alex? Was one of the comments, and they were concerned that because of the situation with LM in class and the way that she behaves with the teachers about the medicine, they were concerned that part of the reason Alex had decided to just finally retire had something to do with getting through a quarter of working and teaching LM. So,
LM had stated that when she recently checked, she was still marked as an active student in your institution, although you had dismissed her in February of 2019.
Yeah.
Is she active in your system, or was she active?
No, she is not active in the system. There, in financial aid, there's a process. It's called student status report, and it's every 2 months. I had completed the student status report and reported her as active on February 2nd. And then on February 8th, she was dismissed. The next student status report did not come out until March, April. And so at that time, I reported in the student status report that she was dismissed and the date of February 8th. In the meantime, on Monday, February 11th, I completed what's called an R2T4 to find out about her financial aid, and I reported it in our reporting system called FAME, that she was a student that was disenrolled.
Well, that's really not your FAME is a third-party processor, not a reporting
system. Right, it's our third-party processor.
Yeah, well, I just want to clarify that because it's different than something like an SLDS or whatever.
Correct, yeah, it's not a song and dance. But anyway, so by reporting her in there and completing the R2T4, everything was done, and that gets sent up to Department of Ed. In the meantime, she had also filed a complaint with Department of Ed and said, I don't have to pay this money. And the Department of Ed asked for our documentation. I sent them the documentation, which has the R2T4, a copy of, I know that you guys have a copy of that, a copy of the direct loan process. This is the R2T4. And copy of that the loans were canceled. And
what was the determination on your R2T4?
They dismissed it and stated she was responsible for paying.
No, what's the date of determination of her withdrawal?
Date of determination was 2/8/19.
2/19, okay. I want to make sure it coincided.
Yeah.
Mr. Hannum, you referenced before page 40 in your catalog, or can you repeat where I wanted to come back around?
I believe it is dismissal. It's on page. It's on page 40.17.
On page 40?
Mm-hmm.
I might have a different catalog here because my page 40 is.
My 40 does not have
it. That. Would you have a copy of that? We could take a look.
Yes, I do, actually.
My page 40 has pictures. And
is this recently updated, or is this reflective of what the student would have?
No, this is not recently updated. This is reflective of what the student would have had.
Okay. Thank you very much.
I do have a second copy here, but you take my only copy, so I can no longer reference it. Sorry. Actually, I do have a third copy.
It's just outlining cause for dismissal, but it doesn't really absolve you of having to talk to the student.
Right. It's not. It doesn't supersede or call out the fact of. This replaces our procedure around
media termination.
I think if it helps, I mean, I think we can own up to the fact that we didn't have any discussion with the student. You know, that the problem was brought to Alex's attention. He acted with what he felt was appropriate alacrity, and that resulted in no formal grievance procedure available for the student. There's no changing that.
So I think we've acknowledged the fact that the student never really had an opportunity to speak to the performance concerns that they would have otherwise had. And so going back now to, obviously, the situation with the license in Washington, the position of the school is that the student would, because of that revoking of the license in Washington, the student would not be able to secure a license in the state of Arizona. I'm just trying to confirm if that's a factual statement or if that is a perceived statement.
That was our belief.
Okay. I know we had discussion around that before.
I do represent the acupuncture board as well, and I did consult with their staff for this case. Cannot say with certainty that she would not be able to get a license. She would not. It would not be a clean licensure, as in board staff at the staff level would just grant it automatically. There would have to be a board review. There would definitely be an interview. The state of Arizona does not have an absolute bar, especially when the revocation came from a different board than something similarly situated to the acupuncture board. However, one of the questions on the application is, have you ever had a disciplinary action or a license suspended or revoked in another jurisdiction? She would have to answer in the affirmative for that, produce the documentation, would have to come before the board for an interview. They would explore the order and even the investigation file from the other state to see if there is a patient safety issue. Based on the fact that this was a lifetime revocation, she does not have the ability to reapply in that state, they would probably take a look at her conduct to see if that would affect patient safety for acupuncture patients in Arizona. So, once again, not an absolute bar, but it's also not an absolute admission to the practice of acupuncture in Arizona. Shot.
Okay.
When did you learn of the issues with her Washington from Washington State and the license?
February 8th.
And our understanding of licensure at the national level is the same.
Okay. So you found out in the same day you terminated?
Yes, sir.
Your contention earlier told me was you terminated because of the license issue.
That's right.
Oh. Did you consult the board? Because you guys state pretty definitively she can't get a license.
Okay.
Did you consult with the board at all? The acupuncture board or talk to any outside agency?
I don't believe so, no.
No, not directly consulted. We looked through the paperwork to read the same thing that
and spoke with one of the board members who just retired off when I retired off the board, but she's still off board.
So every institution, as we know, financial aid is a federal level issue, and every institution is allowed to evaluate their students because that's their accreditation and their license on the line. That determination, I believe that the students can appeal directly to the Department of Ed if they believe that that was a wrong finding. I don't believe that would fall on this board unless the Department of Ed came back and said they made a wrong decision.
No, I'm just trying to establish if they followed their policy. I'm not necessarily disagree with the determination. I want to make sure they followed their policy getting there, you know,
and that it was clear. And it seems as though the letter that came forward to the student would suggest the reason they're being terminated is because they could not secure a license in the state of Arizona based on their revoking of that piece, which is not necessarily a factual statement, although it is a belief on that. It seems as though it was more the fact that the student did not volunteer that information and there were ethical concerns with the student, although it wasn't reflected that way in the letter. And then I guess kind of going back, it sounds like if I'm understanding the process here, and you can clarify, when she appealed, you gave her the ability to apply to come back in and you responded back with, you can, but we're not going to allow you to take financial aid through us. You'll have to find your own source of funding. I certainly don't want to speculate, but I imagine you were somewhat surprised when she said, okay, I will go out and look to see if I can secure that.
We thought we hoped the problem would go away. Simple as that.
Okay. And so it did. And so then when you realized it wasn't going away, you came back with, hey, we've reconsidered, and you're not allowed to come in. to school.
That's right.
Okay.
We also just wanted to clarify in her going forward that she was extremely clear that in going forward, we were not willing as a school to appeal for financial aid on her behalf were she to get back in. So in our admissions process, those emails back and forth were strictly for clarification. Can you tell us that you're comfortable with this if we're moving forward with continuing to evaluate the application? And at some point, we finally did say, we're considering your application done, and you'll be up for review.
Okay. But ultimately, you left the student with the impression she had a legitimate chance of getting back in. When she was working to meet those expectations, the school came back and said, wow, we thought this problem was going to go away. It apparently is not. So we're going to make it go away by saying we're not going to admit you. It sounds like all of that really happened without ever really coming around with the student around the accusations that were brought forward or seeking clarity even around the revocation of the license in the state of Washington.
Well, okay. It's true that we didn't confront the student with evidence from the state of Washington, but I don't think there was any need to do so. I think that is conclusive. And it's true that we should have drafted a better dismissal letter. It should have been more forthright. But we did reevaluate whether it was appropriate to not readmit LM to school. And the decision was made, no matter how bad she wants to come back, if she can pay for it, we have sufficient questions about her professional integrity that we don't want to sponsor her for financial aid. We don't want to sponsor her as a student that's come from our school and should be accredited as a healthcare practitioner in any jurisdiction. And we relied on the findings of the state of Washington that Washington revoked her credential because she was a threat to public safety. So it's true. The process could have been better in the sense that we could have called her in and said, LM, you know, we've had a difficult time here with you in class. But today we discovered the state of Washington has revoked your credential, and we think that's dispositive about your ability to be here. We think you were deceitful with us when you applied. We think you've been deceitful and dishonest in your representation of yourself to your students and the faculty here as a doctor of naturopathy, and we're sorry, but you're just not welcome at this school.
Why do you think she was deceitful with you? Did you ask her about her licenses and stuff? That part I can't figure out.
Well, I think this is a little bit of, it's a contract question, right? I mean, if you're asking, somebody's asking to be admitted to your school, these are the terms and conditions. And if you meet these terms and conditions, we'll admit you. And it's not like a contract between me and Josh, because there are boards that we are responsible to for how we conduct our affairs. But in the end, it's a contract between the student and the school.
But did she not do something on there?
Well, she had every opportunity to say to the school, she said, I'm a doctor of naturopathy. She said, I graduated from a naturopathy school. But here's this white elephant in the room that she knows about and we don't, that she's had her license suspended and revoked. So I think that is deceitful. I think any reasonable person under those circumstances, and again, the reason I bring up the, sorry for all these analogies, but the contract situation is both parties in a contract have a duty of good faith to each other. And one of those is being forthright about why you're coming and what your credentials are. And it's true, we don't have a checklist that says, you know, are you a serial sexual predator? No. Are you carrying a dangerous disease? Well, no. There are lots of things we could put on the application to exclude every conceivable person that we don't want as a student, but certainly a reasonable person under the circumstances of applying to a professional school to get licensed to be a healthcare practitioner, the onus on the student to come forward and say, hey, you know what? You don't ask the question here, but clearly you're entitled to know that the state of Washington has decided that I'm a danger to public safety.
So to help kind of move us along here, I totally appreciate and respect that take on it. I don't have any further questions. I don't know if you do.
No, I think I'm getting to the point where pretty much through my questions, I had some time on questions. And again, I don't question the decision so much to terminate based on that, because I mean, it is concerning when you have to send people out to the field, and it is concerning when you're deemed not once but twice and get an unrevocable revocation or your license, revocation of your license to do that. That would be concerning. But what's in the purview of this board is, does the school have well-established policies, and does it then follow those policies? And I'm just going to be as blunt as I can with you. I've served this is my third term on this board, so I'm very familiar with your school. And the central theme that's always been with your school is the administrative capability. So I just, and I know Mr. Holland very well and a nice man, but I really ask under your presidentship that you address that, okay? Because that's what we're going to look to follow. Did you follow? Were you reasonable? Did you follow what you said you're going to follow? And part of you didn't, okay? I mean, part of you didn't do it in this case, and yourself admittedly. And we're not all perfect, but I do fully believe that a student being dismissed short of running around with a gun, to use the analogy and stuff like that, deserves a sit down and to be talked to and to at least get their side of the thing, not just a letter. I think that's the point. The other part is you don't want her there anymore, understandable because of this fact. But, you're retaining her money, quite frankly. You're keeping her money, which you feel like you is owed to you. There could be an argument, yes or no, but that's it. So go ahead, sorry.
Yes, if I may speak to a few of those things, actually. I think there was a bit of a feeling given in Ellen's depiction that we dragged this application process out. What the whole situation brought to light is, just as you're saying, Mr. Tharp, that we have some holes in the admissions process, right? We're a small school. There's a lot of things that operate on good faith.
Right.
Not a great way to do a lot of things. So something that we did do was when LM was dismissed, we revamped the application right off the bat. We changed the wording. We changed the structure. We added that area where it says specifically, have you ever had, it's a long, like, four sentence of coverages. And so what happened in the process is we informed her. She is now a withdrawn student pursuant to our withdrawn policy. Under the withdrawn policy, you are coming to school to be seen as a brand new student. So not to be seen as a student who has had this history here, who needs to have grievances addressed. Like, as you said, even afterwards, we didn't address them. The idea was, we're looking at this application brand new. And the first thing that happened was she said, well, just use my old application. So she sort of introduced the old application, the certificates and everything that were on there. Then she was in a feeling of urgency, which is understandable. And she filled out another version of the old application with different post-secondary education listed on it. So we had some back and forth. Could you please follow the new procedure? Please grab the application from online. It had already been posted online. She brought that down, turned it in, this time offered some explanation, and again had some post-secondary education that was not consistent. So we had back and forths with, could you please tell us exactly what it is that you have in post-secondary education? Could you provide this? Could you provide that?
I don't think the board's doubting any of that. I think we're, unless Mr. Romano's not, I'm very clear on that.
I just wanted you to know why that stretched out to the period it did and why the grievance never came in, because that would have happened after she had actually been been reviewed, and the reason that we clarified the financial terms were just as we go into this last week of can we say this application is closed now, are we all good? As we go into this last week, we want to make sure that you're clear on that before we even put it into review. And we put it through a sincere review of a student application process.
Okay. So I appreciate that. I think it, respectfully, there were a lot of opportunities to do things differently.
Yes.
For the student. Okay. Our position as a committee is we can either dismiss the complaint, from my understanding, we can file a letter of concern, or we can refer it to the complaint to the full board. I don't believe we have other options or can take any other action at that. And I don't know if this requires a motion or not, but I am going to refer it to the full board based on the inability to today, what you've demonstrated is you did not follow your procedure as outlined in there. And I do think we need to, this is not getting resolved between LM and the school. And so we are here to try and move that to some resolution that would need to happen within the full board to hear that. But we certainly look forward to getting the email communications that demonstrate to the student that they were missing documentation leading up to the interview, which would explain why the interview was delayed. So I would be prepared for that piece of it. And then ultimately helping us again appreciate how you got to termination of a student without following the policy and procedure. And then from there, the board can determine what action they might like to take.
We would need a motion and a vote.
Okay. So I would like to make a motion that we take this complaint and refer it to the full board.
Okay, I second that motion. Glenn Tharp, second.
Okay. All in favor?
Glenn Tharp, aye.
Mike Romano, aye. Okay. We will see you at the board meeting as when the staff determines when that would be most appropriate.
Blanchard will be in touch, correct?
Yeah. Okay. Probably August.
Okay. LM, thank you very much for your patience on the phone. We are referring this to the full board, so you will get communication on when that will occur. We will request your attendance and participation in that as well. So thank you for your time on the phone today.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Well, that concludes all the complaints that we had today. There is an opportunity for call the public if anyone would from the public would like to make a comment. All right. Well, with that then, we will adjourn the committee meeting at 2:22.